Well, hi everybody and welcome. I'm Dave Krueger. I appreciate your promptness, and so many of you are on the line. Speaking of promptness, I didn't send my email to you until a very short time ago, asking you a couple of questions. And you can think about it, respond now, or send it back in an email. But this also helps me to sort of guide and shape some of the discussion, and I'll work in the responses I hear from you for this whole topic of change and transition, something that's bedrock for us as coaches. Two questions. What's the most important question you want answered in this series for you, for your coaching? And secondly, if you were to walk away at the end of 4 weeks saying this was one of the best seminar series ever, what would you walk away with? Notice that these are the two questions that you probably use as a model for each client, each session. What do you want to focus on? What do you want to take away? So even one of you, a buddy named Leah, preempted this and sent the answers to the questions before they came. So I had to add, to double down, I had to add a third question. And here's you may have seen the question. How can you get someone to change? And that's such a fundamental aspect of what we do in coaching. So any responses to any of these three questions right now? And I'll always reserve a bit of time at the beginning and the end for discussion. So if you'll manage the background noise, star six, I welcome discussion. And also, let me add, I'll give you a space to respond in just a second. Be sure that you've downloaded and printed, ideally, the outline. It's an annotated outline, and it has a resource, work pages and exercises at the back to look at when you have time. So I'll probably, I'm working from that same outline. So you'll see some correspondence with what we talk about and that outline, and I'll work in the other things that those of you who are interested in. And we'll go on lecture mode in just a bit so you don't have to worry about background noise and then come back for discussion. But any responses to those questions right now from any of you?
I would say I'd like to learn. Beth Offenbacher.
Welcome. Go ahead, Beth, please.
Thank you. I'm very curious about strategies that can help to minimize the anxiety around the very natural process of change. That's one of my big questions tonight. Thank you.
Okay. And that's a great question. So here's the preface for that to begin thinking about that, and we'll work more toward it in a systematic way. Our brains can't tell the difference between anxiety and excitement. So how we frame it will determine how we proceed, the whole mindset we use and the software we use to deal with it. If we frame it as anxiety, that equals danger, probably better head for cover, or at least mount some kind of defense and protection. If we frame it as excitement, as challenge, as opportunity, then that's a very different mindset of engagement, of moving ahead. So one of the first things we do as coaches at times is to help someone frame something in a way that can be approached and understood and an effective system developed with that. Think about a very simple example of how a mindset determines what you think about next. The title of a book by one of my favorite social psychologist, George Lakoff. The title is Don't Think of an Elephant. What else can you think of? The framing determines what the focus is. So this is one of the things we'll look at in coaching, because that's one of our tools, is helping someone frame something. And then, and why it's such a savvy question, because every step in new territory of something that's different or any kind of change is going to register with the client as anxiety or at least trepidation, concern, because it's moving away from the default mode, what is accustomed and expected. so if that's read as if intuition is telling me this is not the right thing or my gut's telling me I'm wrong, that's a misinterpretation. One of the things we will help someone do is to understand accurately that a step in new territory is always attendant with some uncertainty or trepidation, and this can be reframed as validation that you're moving ahead. So this is the whole developmental framework that we'll have in mind as coaches to determine some things that we say and talk about and focus on with clients. So that's a great question. And we definitely will return to that. Others? Are there questions, thoughts, things you'd like to be sure we focus on? Well, if not, I know there are a number of you on the line. You guys are lurking. And I'm not going to get lonely, so I'm going to put it on lecture mode and act like everybody's really enthusiastic about doing this. I would welcome any emails that you want to send answering one or both or all three of those questions. So here's what I would suggest that you do for each of the four seminars, and we'll save some time if you want to share your observation or your experience at the end. Write down the one thing that is your most important takeaway for each seminar. It may occur in the first third, it may occur after halftime, or it may be right at the end, but write it down. And that way, it will make it more complete and more memorable in your experience. Some of you have heard me cite this study. I'm always a fan of what's the simplest example of something that can possibly be given. University of Waterloo did a study of people reading the same passage in a book. Half the group read it out loud, half the group read it silently. They then gave a test. The ones who read it out loud did 40% better. Putting it in an output channel creates a closure in the brain and creates a more complete and accessible memory. So maybe consider writing it down. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode, and we're going to move into our first seminar. And remember, the annotated outline is there if you haven't looked at it or seen it, to maybe print it out so that you don't have to take a bunch of notes and you can sort of listen to if this makes sense to you. So I'll put us on lecture mode and come back at the end for questions or comments. So in our first seminar, we're going to talk about the dynamics and the developmental stages of both change and transition. So first, consider what's your story. When we want someone to know who we are, we share stories of our lives, our childhoods, our family, what's important to us. When we know people well, we come to know their stories, what's important, what shaped and molded them, even trials and turning points. Our own story is a significant organizer of our experiences. It's a continuity of where we've been, where we are now, and where we'll go. So our stories define and orient and guide us. Now, our lives to each of us and to each of our clients are not stories. It's just the way things are. What I'm talking about here is a way for us to look at and reflect on and organize how we can understand someone and how especially we can understand a client. But remember, a client is not telling you their story. They're telling you the way it is. Now, a good story is never more necessary than at a time of change and transition, a time that can be unsettling, confusing, uncertain, insecure. So the ability to craft a good ongoing story at crucial times may determine the success of what will follow. We learn through stories. We use stories to understand, to make sense of things, especially to remember. The brain requires story and processes things in that way. So a good story bridges past and present to make sense of where we were, where we are, and the uncertainty. future. So here, as we look at the dynamics of change, change is really the event, the situation. You move to a new city, divorce, retire, have a significant loss, take a new job, lose an old one, change careers. As we focus on change, we address the rituals of change, the work tools, the strategic goals. First, the idea of change can create an anticipation, an uncertainty, because we're looking at something new. We've not quite been there before. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, trepidation, even anxiety. Next, if you continue rather than return to your comfort zone, expansion into a new experience. Then, ultimately, effectiveness and mastery. Now, here are a couple of additional aspects of change that may sound paradoxical. Every step forward means relinquishing a past position. So someone must mourn. They must say goodbye emotionally as well as practically to a familiar, maybe long-held and practiced old story, even if it doesn't work that well. This is a process. It's a developmental step. Not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. It's more like saying goodbye to an old friend, to give up a habit or a pattern of behavior or even a hope that by getting the old story just right or doing it better, it's going to work this time. And the second is the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change can be an injury to self-esteem. Now, this carefully crafted old story, even with aspects of identity, is replaced by something better. And that can be experienced as a kind of an assault or an embarrassing affront to one's pride. Because, man, I could have been doing it better all this time. Look at all this time I wasted. So here are at least six components in this dynamic of change. Now, these are not headlines. These are not going to be signs that you can label or things that your client will report to you. These are just for your reflection and to think about maybe more as internal conceptual markers. The myth that there is a perfect choice. The illusion that the perfect choice is going to solve all problems. The disappointment that nothing is perfect and there isn't even an ultimate arbiter of fairness. The scientific term for that is called adulthood. The development, the recognition that no one's going to take care of it for you, also adulthood. And the growth to take the next best action, in one way of thinking about it, all we ever have to do in life is the next best thing. And finally, the consolidation. It's a happy-sad experience. Happy about the effectiveness of constructing a way to move ahead, of not constructing an obstacle, of experiencing mastery, but sad about mourning the old story and the hopes that were part of that old story. Now, every transition begins with an ending, a change event, and we have to let go of the old before we can begin the new. Every beginning ends something. And as Agnes Allen, an American writer, said, almost anything is easier to get into than out of. Changing to a better job or career may ironically cause similar grief and confusion as the sad end of an important relationship in the past. The reason it's important to recognize is that some of the feelings you experience today may have nothing to do with the present ending, but come from the resonance with similar situations in the past. Letting go is difficult. Herodotus, Greek historian, 5th century BC, said this, diseases most attack men when they are exposed to change. even when we look forward to a change, anticipate it eagerly, some of us still hold on to what used to be, and we wonder whether the change was a good idea or not. We are defined and define ourselves by our roles and relationships, those we like, even the ones we didn't. So letting go is an ambiguous experience. New skills are needed for negotiating the passage, separating the old from the new. The characteristic ways of coping with endings need to be understood. Each person has his or her own style of ending and new beginning. You may be already thinking about how this applies to you, or possibly more specifically, how this applied to you in your professional transition into professional coaching and away from what you were doing before. Each person has his own style of ending and new beginning, and each person tends to respond in a typical and consistent way. Four of the most common styles of ending, since you ask. Abrupt, designed to sort of foreclose or deny the impact and the meaning of change. Slow and gradual, so that it's kind of hard to see if anything really important has happened. External focus. Some people learn to cultivate a subtle way of covertly inviting people to act on them when change is in the air. Active or passive, proactive or reactive. So some people work to establish blamelessness in regard to endings. Ah, she just walked out on me, no warning, no nothing, she just left me. It's like someone who shouts, I didn't do it, when the police arrive, and calls attention to himself and makes everybody suspicious. So how you approach change comes from the style you develop for dealing with endings. And that makes it almost invisible, because the more we habitually do something and hardwire our brains, that means it's relegated to the unconscious operating system that's in charge of about 90 to 95% of what we do. So that style is likely to reflect earlier experiences as well as later influence, and be consistent over time and situation, whatever your style is. And typically, someone repeats a behavior pattern, as with earlier losses. The pattern may be similar, although the loss, the nature of the loss, may be totally different. One person feels the grief and anxiety for the entire group or family. Another comforts the mourner. Another takes over routine responsibility. And another assumes control for the situation, whether that's a family, a company, a group of buddies. Although it's advantageous to understand your own style of endings, a part of you will resist that understanding with passion. Now, we're not just talking about big endings here. Things like divorce, career transition, job loss, children leaving for college, retirement. Even the small endings have their own personality that's consistent with the big endings. Think about the last ending or change that you experienced personally. Think about how you tend to act at the end of an evening at a friend's house or after a night on the town. Do you drag things out by starting new activities and conversations when others seem to be ready to leave? Do you suddenly say it was a nice evening and abruptly dash out? Did you say goodbye to everyone? Or leave ahead a plan so you could avoid all those goodbyes? Notice how small and large endings can be the same, leaving a job or moving from a neighborhood, as well as leaving dinner with friends. The person who leaves early and the one who stays late both avoid endings in their own way and the discomfort of the disruption. A dasher and a lingerer share the same dynamic. It's the ending that makes the beginning possible. So here are some things to think about in terms of letting go, some principles of letting go. Accept the reality as well as the importance of the subjective loss, the experience of loss, the meaning. acknowledge the loss openly. Think of something specifically for you that you can reflect on these things to see if they make sense. Accept and expect overreaction. Overreaction comes because of the emotional importance of a loss, as well as past experiences, especially with similar losses. Expect and accept the process of grief and the stages of grief, anger, bargaining, anxiety, sadness, and then disorientation and confusion. And it's not always linear like that, but it's back and forth. Compensate for the losses. Ask, what can I give back to balance what's been taken away or lost? Learn as much as possible about the loss in order to benefit from it. This is important. Define what's over and what isn't over. Then mark the endings. Rather than just talking about the endings, create actions or activities that actually concretize or dramatize them. When Renee McPherson took over the leadership of Dana Corporation, he saw that operations were choked by cultural rules that nobody could remember. In an initial management meeting, he piled all the company manuals on a table. They formed a stack almost 2 feet tall. Then he said, here's what we're going to do. He pushed that 2-foot stack of manuals to the floor and held up a single piece of paper with the corporate principles. He said, these are our new rules. Next, treat the past with respect. Also, consider taking a piece of the old story with you, a symbol, an emblem. And lastly, endings ensure the continuity of what really matters. And the past, the good old days, will be idealized at times, denigrated at times. The changes anyone experiences are different than anything they've ever experienced before. They've never been at this point in their lives before. The transition process by which people can get through change needs to be a system that can serve as a map. That's our basic framework of coaching, to help someone develop a system. If you want to change, focus on the system, not just the goal. Most people have the same goals. Winners and losers have the same goals. Focus on the system. Think about how you do that. With each session, you create a map that the client determines the focus and the destination, the bookends of that map. So you together have a map with the point of reference to the client so that you can measure progress along the way and create a closure that has meaning and plan for the client. So here are the dynamics, a brief overview of the dynamics of transition now, to contrast that or add to change. The change event is the snapshot. The change process may be the wide-angle view. The transition is the time-lapse photograph. The transition is the process, including especially the internal story of change, a shift in orientation, even self-definition and identity. Transition is awareness of the seasonal cycles while attending to the daily weather. As you respond to change and embrace transition, you let go of the old story, the outlived chapter, and evolve into your new story. You transform an evolving identity that incorporates the change in order to sustain and enhance them. So the transition story provides the coherence that can be reassuring in the present and foreshadow the future. The person you were yesterday is the person you are today and the person you will be tomorrow, only more so. Yet, seemingly paradoxically, old stories need to be mourned and along with them, the part of the self left behind. You also have, if you think about it, your own characteristic way of a new beginning, just as with endings. Change and renewal seems to involve new relationships, but they can also involve new places or projects. For some, it can begin with a new state of mind, a new feeling, a self-image, or goal. Sometimes the beginning results from careful and conscious effort, but for other people, new beginnings have a mysterious and, it can seem like, accidental quality. Though we think we take charge and plan our lives carefully to start again after an ending, yet some of the most important beginnings take place in the unfocused darkness outside our awareness. Here's an example. Many years ago, 2 years after my divorce, I was at an author's conference in Austin. I was planning to leave Saturday after the last conference meeting. I had, and I carefully calculate these things, I had just enough time to drive to my ranch between Austin and Houston to catch the sunset. One of the measures of the quality of my life is the number of sunsets. I'm at the ranch on the porch with a cigar and single malt scotch, watching the sunset over the lake and trees. But for some unknown reason, I decided to stay for the social hour, meaning I would miss the sunset. It was a wine and cheese event. Nothing, by the way, to compare to my single malt, and never mind the cigar. There I met my future wife. 2 years later, we would marry on the porch I didn't get to that evening for the sunset, at sunset with her children and mine attending. Without a transition, change simply rearranges the furniture. People imagine that they can prepare for retirement by making specific changes, such as adequate financial preparation, a place to live, or maybe just developing a new hobby. Yet the challenge is the transition. And change only prepares you for the transition. People have to let go of the outlived chapters of their life story and find a new one to replace it, or the outlived chapters of the business story to create a new one. We'll come back to that with some interesting discussion, I think. At times, rituals and celebrations can further this process of transition and serve as markers. Every lifetime has its own unique rhythm, and the personal developmental steps for both change and transition, I believe, deserve attention, because transition is a process. And it does take time. No matter how many people you put on the job, it still takes 9 months to have a baby. There are three components, in this way of thinking about it, of transition. First, there's an ending. Then a neutral zone. An important, maybe directionless time in between that can be filled with mourning, with work, with getting ready and planning. Third, then you finish with a new beginning. Now, let's look at each of these because I want to help you listen to where your client may be in this process. Maybe right now where you are in a similar process, because each is important. And there's not a Procrustean bed to fit this into, but something that I think an understanding and looking at the developmental overview. So first, the ending. Every transition begins with an ending. Even though it sounds backward, endings always come first. Willingly or unwillingly, an ending. So the first task then is to let go. Whether an individual or organizational level, whether the source of transition is external change or internal development, the transition always starts with an ending. To start doing things a new way, you have to end the way you were doing them. The most common mistake is simply to add a new pattern to the ones that already exist. The impact of the transition doesn't necessarily bear a direct relationship to the importance of the change that triggered it. One person can be brought to an abrupt standstill by divorce or job loss, while another person takes it in stride. Someone else may come to terms with a debilitating illness, yet be demolished by the loss of a pet. Here's one dramatic way to mark an ending of a story. Spanish explorer Hernando Cortes came ashore with his men at Veracruz, and he knew that his men were extremely reluctant about the exploration ahead and knew the danger and the threat in this new land. Some had called it hopeless. So faced with a continent full of unknown adversaries and the dissension in his men, each person in his party was ambivalent about moving ahead or turning back. Cortez burned the ships. So here are some components of the ending process. There are usually five aspects, and these are not in sequence any more than the stages of loss and grief. But first, there's a disengagement. Usual events disengage from the context and the identity in which people knew themselves. Think about divorce, a death, a job change, a move, an illness. This disengagement with the way things were begins a process of change. Second, dismantling. Old familiar behaviors and habitual habits are taken apart or come apart a piece at a time. This gradual transition involves slowly unpacking what was lost, including the lost identity that's part of it. An ending stops what it used to be. It's not the old way anymore, but it's not yet the new way as this dismantling occurs. Think of it like, you know, taking tennis lessons. You get with a pro, you had a really good game, but the pro suggests a slightly different way of holding a slightly different backhand. For a little while, you don't have the old game in place, not the new game. It's uncomfortable, and that transition is a place of discomfort. You need to go back to the old game and restore a lack of anxiety, uncertainty, or you can keep with the deliberate practice to develop a better game. Three, disidentification. Ending connections with what used to be, you also lose an old way of defining yourself. Old friends you didn't inherit in the divorce. Often people describe this phase as not being quite sure who they are. Now, I thought about this a good deal when I came to terms with retiring from my practice of teaching psychiatry, psychoanalysis, and becoming an executive mentor coach. For 25 years of practice, and 7 years prior to that, of medical school and residency, I identified with being a doctor. I wondered if using the MD after my name was a way of hanging on to that identity, though I clearly knew I was no longer practicing, nor would I ever return to it. The old identity can potentially stand in the way of transition as well as transformation and self-renewal. The fourth, disenchantment. Coexisting with a still vivid picture of the way things are is the split-screen image of the way things were. Disenchantment is the discovery that in some sense, your world is really no longer simply the way it used to be. Disenchantment is a recurring experience throughout the lifetime of anyone who has the courage to trust and believe in the first place. Some significant transitions begin with disenchantment, the loss of a job, the loss of a relationship. Listen for this possible distinction in your clients. The disenchanted person moves on, while the disillusioned person goes through the play again with new actors on a perpetual quest for what's elusive, but not letting go. Five, disorientation. Disorientation affects the sense of place, space, and time. The usual way of structuring time changes. The future is unclear. If you stopped a regular job to do coach training, look at how things were so routine. Your whole day was scheduled and structured. Your week, suddenly, the day's a blank page and you got to fill it in. That's really different, as you know. These elements of ending are not in sequence or in any particular order at all. For example, in a divorce, one partner may experience disidentification and disorientation and then decide to act, which leads to disengagement. If you're scoring that play, it's 3-5-1. The other partner, unaware of the impending change, begins an ending with disengagement and the challenge of disenchantment and then gets disoriented. That's 1-4-5. So there's no normal or natural order to this process, nor is there any normal order of reactions to an ending. And I mention them so that you can help someone understand and characterize where they are, and maybe if it's useful to look at a slightly bigger picture. Endings are the first rather than the last act of the play. And notice that only the first, the disengagement, refers exclusively to external things. The second, dismantling, can be either internal or external, and the other three, disidentification, disenchantment, disorientation, those are all internal. It's the internal things that hold us to the past. Yet we often try to deal only with the external issues, to leave the relationship, the job, move across the country. This focuses, uses change to avoid transition, to storm out of a job because of a bad boss, rather than discover that that keeps you finding and agreeing to work for such bosses is an internal issue. To end another relationship rather than letting go of the behaviors and the beliefs and attitudes, to keep choosing the same people and recreating the same relationships. Remember your friend from college who had numerous relationships, yet the dozens of faces were on the same woman or the same man? After someone struggles initially with change and then begins to grapple with transition, this is the true work, the beginning of transformation. Two, mid-phase, the neutral zone. A resistance to transition is often not the problem of giving up a job or a relationship, or even, harder yet still, not even of an identity. The real problem is the time of nothingness that awakens old fears about abandonment and death. People in transition will create new ways to return to the old story. Every ending is followed by some distress or confusion. We can expect it as part of a transition. Ending, confusion, new beginning. And here are a couple of principles. People will resist both the change and the transition. They will return to the familiar. Now, the sidebar comment here is something that's so fundamental in coaching. People will always revert to the behavior, the thoughts, the feelings that are part of their identity, because that's the bedrock model. Now, if you help a client navigate something that's different, some kind of change, unless that change is incorporated and transitioned into an evolving model of the self identity, then that person is going to revert back to exactly what they did before. The force of identity is the most powerful force of the human psyche. We'll always return to it. That's why we have to pay attention to that operating model, that bedrock foundation of identity, because that's what transition is about, to help someone create change that's permanent, to change their identity. We're going to return to this, and we'll look at this as we look at the seven-step way of deconstructing someone's story, the roadmap system. So, as someone will return to the familiar, you can reframe this return to the familiar as a way of measuring progress to see how far you've come, an opportunity to validate your commitment to move forward. This in-between time of transformation is the real work of letting go, and it prepares the foundation for the next stage. So it's important not to rush through this neutral zone, this mid-phase, too quickly in order to minimize the disruption and the feeling of uncertainty. This is a very important time for a work in progress, and you have to stay with the uncertainty, with the trepidation, the not knowing. You have to stay with your tennis game is worse than it was and hopefully better than it's going to be, but it's lousy right now. When I went through my career transition, I needed a time in between before I began my new career. I knew I was a medical professional in my mind and heart. And I'd be tempted to revert to that identity and style of being if I had any doubt about my new endeavor, which is why, among other things, I made a wholesale transition to retire completely from my medical practice, burning ship, and close out that in every way, then to spend some time at my ranch writing and physically working before I began training for certification as a professional coach. In another era, the person in transition left the village and went into a forest or desert to remain for a time. Removed from old connections and without old identities, the old reality changed as well. This in-between time of empty space fostered the generation of a new sense of self. So actually, mine was way closer to caveman than I realized at the time. When someone doesn't allow this essential period of time of transition, important work is avoided. If transition is treated as an event, like crossing the street, a necessary process is averted. And often someone, without even knowing why, finds a way of being alone and away from familiar distractions. Sometimes it's a long weekend alone in a quiet place, having the time to think things over and not do much of anything is a point. One of the significant transitions in work life is an internal one. It's likely that someone, especially after the age of 40, people transition from being motivated by the chance to demonstrate confidence to being motivated by the chance to find personal meaning in work and its results. This is part of the shift from the question of how to the question of why. Confidence begins to lose its force as a powerful motivating force. To do the same thing over and over becomes less challenging, less invigorating. The brain also plays a role in this. Dopamine is the brain chemical that induces excitement by anticipating pleasure or reward, something new or different. The rush from dopamine release motivates people to take risk, and this is exciting and adds to the activation. But neuroscientists have shown that anticipating a reward is actually more exciting than receiving it, because anticipating a reward activates the anticipatory release of dopamine, but actually receiving the reward results in norepinephrine, which is the chemical of the marathon system, not the sprint system of dopamine. So that's why sometimes something that's long anticipated and planned for can result in a kind of paradoxical disappointment, like a buyer's remorse, or it's just not as exciting as I thought it would be. In coaching, think about how this can be. Clients can hit plateaus in coaching after a couple of months and consider suspending work. So this is the anticipatory excitement and the newness and kind of also running out of things to say and getting into the mid-phase of the hard work. So you will need to recognize this not as someone being ready to stop, but another phase of the work so that it can be dosed and timed and titrated and explained as, or considered at least, as a natural development. So a couple of questions to focus on the meaning of transition at any particular time in life. One, what is it time to let go of in my life now? Transition, remember, starts with letting go. And an important distinction between change and transition, change is focused on reaching a goal. Transition begins with letting go of what no longer fits the life stage and the developmental aspects you are pursuing now. Each person has to figure out what that is, what doesn't fit. And it's usually internal rather than external. The transition begins with letting go of something you've assumed or believed, some way you've always seen yourself, including some world outlook or attitude. And two, what is waiting to make its entrance into your life? The answer is usually something internal, subjective, often in the shape of an idea or question you ask yourself. Remember, to know to ask is half the answer. It may feel like a message to you, a message that something standing just outside the door of everyday awareness, waiting for your attention. And you have to deal with endings all of your life. We all do. Yet, curiously, we often handle them poorly. We either take them too seriously and confuse them with finality, or see them as something without sequel, forgetting that they're simply the first phase of a transition and a precondition of self-renewal. So at the same time we fail to take them seriously enough because they scare us, we then try to avoid them. I saw this, for example, in my therapy and analytic practice before becoming a coach. It's not the loss of someone that creates problems. It's the failure to internalize that person and relationship that creates problems. For some, the present consists at least in part of a past they've not quite yet let go of. Here's an illustration of the emptiness of this neutral zone, Leo Tolstoy's description. I felt that something had broken within me, on which my life had always rested, that I had nothing left to hold on to, and that morally my life had stopped. And yet I would give no reasonable meaning, could not give any reasonable meaning to any action in my life. And I was surprised that I had not understood this from the beginning. My state of mind was as if some wicked and stupid jest was being played upon me by someone. I asked myself, what will be the outcome of what I do today? What shall I do tomorrow? What will be the outcome of my life? Why should I live? Why should I do anything? The reasons for this emptiness between old life and new include the process of transformation, as Tolstoy captured, is essentially a death and rebirth. It's not a mechanical modification. The process of disengagement and reintegration is the source of renewal, just the way an apple tree needs the cold of winter. The emptiness between the stages of a life journey provides a perspective on the stages themselves. This is in-between time with a perspective that can occur nowhere else. So here's a summary of a creative use of this neutral zone. Some things to think about. Embrace setbacks, losses, disadvantages as entry points into new situations or solutions. Establish a regular time and place to be alone, to reflect. Provide opportunities for others important in your change and transition to engage with you in this time. Accept your need for this neutral zone. Make sense of your experience, because it isn't a dead-end road. And understanding this as a transition can avoid the traps of moving fast too forward, or going into reverse, or trying to speed things up, or just evolve from that discomfort. 5, engage in training and techniques of discovery and innovation. Become informed about the change and the transition process. And just as you're hearing one version of it right now, what you're doing just now and what you will help your clients to do, to take this opportunity to discover what you really want. When you guys have time, look at the very last in the resources, I call it the work pages and exercise. Look at the last exercise on needs and ideals and spend just a few minutes doing that for yourself. We'll come back to that. I'll tell you the considerations of why I believe it's so important. Engage in experimentation. Keep a log of the experiences during the neutral zone. Put it in an output channel. Take this pause to write maybe at least a brief autobiography. Think of what would be unlived in your life if it ended today. We're going to come back to that too. Reflect consciously on the present transition experience in your own life. The neutral zone, the time between the old and the new, Is a rich time for that insight a necessary time? And three, you finish with a new beginning. The new beginning follows the ending, and the new beginning involves changing how you see yourself and especially aspects of your identity. It's when the endings are finished that we can truly begin. The end allows a new beginning. We may not always know when the ending is complete and when we've been in the neutral zone long enough, especially when the path is genuinely a new beginning. For a time, we may not even know which is the real path. Think about the important beginnings in your own past. You bumped into an old friend you hadn't seen for years, and he told you about a job at his company that opened up just that morning. You met your spouse to be at a party you really hadn't planned to go to and almost skipped. You picked up a book that changed your life. There was only one lying on a friend's table when you dropped by for an unexpected visit. The lesson in these experiences is that when we are ready to make a new beginning, we will find or create an opportunity. When you're ready to learn, a teacher will appear. There will be a wine and cheese event. New beginnings often occur with an internal realignment rather than an external shift. When we are aligned ourselves with deep longings, when needs and ideals align with purpose, each step forward can set off an inner warning system. The brain's error detection mechanism will read something's wrong each new or different step we make. And the brain will say, this is wrong, but it's not a signal to retreat to an old way of being. Never underestimate the change back pressure from the system, your family, your company. It's their self-statement of reaction to change. It's their brains doing exactly what your brain does. Say, this is not right about this. This is not what I expected. It's an attempt to restore normal order and not do the work of change. They're not out to get you. A group or system has a status quo bias and inertia as well as an individual. Jung said, the most important problems can't be solved, they have to be outgrown. The important distinction here is this. Have you really moved through the endings in the neutral zone to find the beginning you now want to follow? Or is this beginning a way of avoiding an ending or aborting the neutral zone experience? One thing you can do is begin to identify yourself with the final result of the new beginning. What's it going to feel like when you've actually done what you're setting out to do? Create a visualization of that experience. We understandably have ambivalence about new beginnings. We haven't established a comfort zone yet or grooved a default mode because we don't know the outcome yet. So beginnings may reactivate some old anxieties as well as making it very real that the ending has happened. The risk and uncertainty of the new beginning will resonate with past anxiety, maybe even trigger old memories of failures, and a new beginning will erode the equilibrium of the neutral zone. For example, one of the most challenging aspects of being an adult and taking care of ourselves is that we have to come to the end of the past to hope that someone else will do it for us. And it's more difficult to let go of what never was than even what was traumatically so, because you have to give up the hope of getting it just right, just exactly the way you wanted it in the past. And, as I've mentioned, as part of that scientific modality of adulthood, the illusion that there's an ultimate arbiter of fairness. New beginnings need to have a clear sense of purpose. To reinforce a new beginning, you'll have to evolve evolving a new identity that replaces the old one. So, take things step by step. Recognize that comparing yourself to someone else is not an apples to apples. You're comparing your inside to their outside, not apples to apples. It's important in a new beginning to not be preoccupied with results. So this is an important aspect of a new beginning, to shift your purpose from the goal to the process of reaching the goal. An example is the new job is to find a job, if that's the case. Every transition is a transition from something into something. Each of these transitions corresponds to internal changes, and that can integrate a new identity with elements of the old. There are many endings, many little beginnings, with emptiness and creation in between. There are very few times we actually have direct contact with our future selves. We seldom review our present circumstances as they might appear to a relative objective future self. If we plan ahead, we specify goals rather than future development of identity or states of mind. This may contribute to looking back at our own past with a bit of alienation or disbelief, almost as if someone else lived it. Exceptions occur at certain moments of life, perhaps prompted by the excitement of a major event, that we look ahead and say, I'll remember this moment forever. The awareness seems to change present experience, to enhance it perhaps with special lighting and sharp focus. So here are some considerations to reinforce a new beginning. Be consistent. This is the best way to get an idea of how something will work. Be consistent and be totally immersed in the process. Shrink the change to ensure stepwise success. Evolve a new identity. Maybe even generate a symbol of this new identity, a representative that can be a constant point of reference. And celebrate small successes. This is all in the context of having the system for change. In 10 or 20 years, when we look back on present time laced among experiences, will be inevitably some envy and some regret. We envy the younger self who could relatively do so much and will regret the younger self did not do more, different or better, or invest in fill in the blank when it was fill in the blank. We may wonder why we learned too little, love too small, risk too low, and spent too much time in routine and distraction. This view from a future self looking back to the present can be informative. So, here's a question and a challenge to end this, because I want to have at least a minute or two for discussion. I hope to have more. So, here's the question. Imagine a photograph of you 100 years from now. What's the story you most want your great-grandchildren to tell about you? And here's the challenge. What if right now is a turning point for you? The time your grandchildren will tell stories about years from now. The time you awakened your deep passion and acted on it. The time you did what you were always meant to do. Or, this moment of truth may be a brief awakening silenced by the sensible obstacles we're familiar with constructing. In that case, your grandchildren will have to be content telling stories about your favorite sports team or what great cookies you used to bake. It will all depend on how brave you'll be. We just have a couple of minutes and we're in discussion mode. Any clarifications or thoughts or questions from anyone? I hope this is making sense to you, maybe stimulating a bit. Thoughts or questions?
Yeah, I have one. Hello, this is Chuck.
Please, go ahead.
Hi, this is great. Thank you so much. And I love how much more you're giving us than the outline.
Great, I had a question about. I appreciate it.
I'm thinking about the coaching I have done and hope to do more of, but focused on people in transition is around career transition. And one of the questions I usually ask people to think about is, you know, as you talk about saying goodbye to certain things, certain ways of being, certain tasks, or skills or whatever, it's important to bring forward, like be clear about, you know, in the recruiting business, they might call it transferable skills, but it's important to know what you can bring forward into the future, you know, and whether it's skills you want to keep using. And I just noticed that in the questions you had put in those areas, I forget what they were, it was a couple of times, you talked about what you're going to let go of and then what's waiting to enter. How about what you're not going to let go of and you will be bringing forward? Is that at a later stage? Am I jumping the gun or?
I would say a resounding yes, and your experience agrees with that, that it's part of what someone brings. But it won't be exactly the same as they've experienced it before, because it will be in a new context, and it will be in the experience of transformation. So what surrounds it may be different, so it may impart different and evolving meanings as part of being metabolized into a new context. So change can be expected there, too, to see what's the same and what remains invariant, but what also is part of that new context and experience. So I think all of that's important. That's a great way to put it.
Well, and I think it gives a level of comfort in this sort of zone where, you know, you're not at the new shore, but you've left the old shore behind.
Yes.
There's a level of comfort and familiarity with, if you can say, oh, well, I definitely want to keep doing that, or I definitely want to keep working in a X culture or something,
yeah.
You know, and I feel like that's important.
And it's also important to acknowledge what is there and what can't be changed anyhow, or what is the part of the reality someone's experiencing. When someone goes through change and transition, they are still who they are. They're carrying the bedrock of identity, yet applying and extending it in new ways. So that simply acknowledges that they are all of who they were, yet more and different. So that bedrock is there, but yet it's being applied and integrated in new and different ways. That's part of a growth mindset, and that's exactly what we foster in coaching. So thank you for your comments. I ran over, and I want to respect the time. If you have any comments or things we didn't get to, fire off an email to me, and those questions that I asked, if you have thoughts about those, send those to me too. I welcome those. So we'll pick up right here next time. Thanks again for all of your input and energy. I really look forward to picking up right here next time. Take good care of yourselves. See you next week. Bye.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Thank you.
We enjoyed.
Bye.
Thank you.